Having gone through this kind of kerfuffle over taxes, the power of the crown was then further weakened by the inopportune departure of the sovereign. Philip II had an awful lot of problems to deal with all over his empire, and although the struggle with France, the so-called Habsburg-Valois struggle, was winding down, there had been a ceasefire signed in October of 1558, and a formal peace treaty in April of 1559, war had again broken out in the Mediterranean against the Turks. There was a sense in the Habsburg Empire, in which there was always a fire burning somewhere, and the minute you put out one in one corner of the empire, another one blazed up somewhere else. This situation demanded the king's presence in Spain, and therefore in 1559 he left the Netherlands. He did intend to return fairly quickly, but in the spring of 1560 a Spanish naval expedition sent to recover the town of Tripoli in North Africa was ambushed en route, and something like 10,000 men and 27 ships were lost. It was an extraordinary catastrophe because it denuded the western Mediterranean of Spanish naval forces. Spain itself was now vulnerable to Turkish attack, and Philip could not leave. It was clear that he wasn't going to be going back to the Netherlands anytime soon. He therefore established a regency government in the Netherlands, headed by his half-sister Margaret of Parma. Margaret was to be advised by the councils of state and finance and by the Privy Council, and her chief advisor was a man by the name of Antoine Pernot, who is the Bishop of Arras, but he's usually known as Cardinal Granvelle. Now, as we have seen earlier in 16th century France, in the conditions of a regency government, especially with a female regent on the throne, any kind of latent opposition to the crown was bound to be emboldened. If the sovereign himself wasn't physically present, it seemed somehow less loathsome to make trouble for the monarchy. And between 1559 and 1564, disputes over a series of three separate issues would lead to the formation of a really formidable opposition to the Habsburg crown, and from Philip II's point of view, a rather dangerous opposition. The first point of contention was the issue of Spanish troops. Philip II had planned to leave about 3,000 Spanish troops to garrison the southern frontier with France. Now, to his mind, this seemed like a perfectly reasonable thing to do. He had, after all, just concluded a long and bitter war with France on this very frontier, and he therefore felt it was, only prudent to guard the frontier. But the plan raised an awful lot of anger in the Netherlands itself, because everybody could see that that garrison, those 3,000 troops, was about the same size as the kinds of garrisons that the Spanish maintained elsewhere in Italy. And there was a fear in the Netherlands of losing their privileges and of being reduced to the, to the less assertive status of the Spanish dependencies of Naples or Sicily. Therefore, the States General said that it was not going to release any of the 9-year tax it had voted in 1557 unless the Spanish troops left. It didn't want them in its territory. Philip II didn't like this kind of blackmail, but in the end he was forced to give way. And in January of 1561, the troops embarked and were shipped to the Mediterranean. The second conflict was over a scheme which has come down to us as the so-called New Bishoprics Scheme, and it requires a little bit of introduction because it's a little odd. In the 1550s, there had been only 4 bishoprics to govern the entire Habsburg Netherlands. Episcopal boundaries really bore no resemblance to the linguistic frontier, and the huge size of these bishoprics really made it hard for the bishops to administer their dioceses efficiently. Just to give an example, England, which was only slightly larger, well, about half larger than the Netherlands, had fully 17 bishoprics as opposed to the 4 in the Netherlands. Now, in 1559, Philip decided to resolve this situation, and he reached an agreement with the Pope to redivide the Netherlands into 14 bishoprics. The new bishoprics were now to correspond to the linguistic frontiers and to be under the central supervision of a new Archbishop of Mechelen. 10 of the new bishoprics were now to be merged with large monasteries in the vicinity so that the new bishoprics could be funded from the monastery revenues without introducing any new taxes, and the plan was announced in the spring of 1561. And it promptly created immediate uproar. It seems rational. It even is an effort for Philip to reform ecclesiastical administration without raising taxes. But the nobility in particular were offended by several features of the plan. In the first place, they were just offended by the fact that the plan was announced very suddenly, which made it obvious that they hadn't been really consulted in the matter. The grandees, the highest aristocrats in the Netherlands, on the Council of State, hadn't even been informed. And for it to be exposed that they didn't have any real decision-making power was not only embarrassing, but enraging to them. Second of all, Philip's plan now required that the new bishops be skilled theologians. Again, it may seem reasonable to the modern mind, but what that meant, therefore, was that episcopal chairs could no longer be sinecures for the nobility. It had long been a tradition in medieval and early modern Europe for second sons, perhaps less distinguished or less talented sons to be parked in the church, as it were, in these sort of proprietary bishoprics. And now that there was going to be, in a sense, a theological test or a theological requirement to be a bishop, that option was being foreclosed.